Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. Tonight, Thursday, December 9th, at 7:30 p.m., the NEC Jazz Orchestra presents Soul on Soul, the music of Mary Lou Williams, inside of Jordan Hall in Boston, Massachusetts. The ensemble will be joined by NEC 2005 alum and pianist Carmen Staff, the 2009 winner of the Mary Lou Williams Jazz Pianist Competition. The concert will be broadcast internationally on Wednesday, December 22nd. For more information, necmusic.edu. Future Situation Fluxus guest, keyboardist, vocalist, and composer Rachel Eckroth is on tour this month. Tonight, Thursday, December 9th, she performs at Sam First in Los Angeles, California for the album release party for her latest effort, The Garden. It's been nominated for Best Contemporary Instrumental Album at the 64th Grammy Awards. For more information, racheleckroth.com. At Birdland in New York City, tonight, Thursday, December 9th, inside of Birdland Theater, pianist Sullivan Fortner, and on Saturday, December 11th, trumpeter Wayne Tucker and his band. Inside of Birdland Jazz Club, tomorrow night, February, December 10th, the Birdland Big Band. And on Saturday, December 11th, bassist Jay Leonhardt, and on December 14th through 18th, the group Artemis. For more information, birdlandjazz.com. Pianist Armin Danilian performs tomorrow night, Friday, December 10th, at Gateways Inn in Lenox, Massachusetts, with bassist Jason Schwartz. For more information, gatewaysinn.com. This Friday and Saturday night, December 10th and 11th, at the Jazz Forum in Tarrytown, New York, organist Joey DeFrancesco's trio for two sets. And on Sunday, December 12th, Brazilian Sunday with the Nanny Assis Quartet for two sets. For more information, jazzforumarts.org. And performing during a live stream tonight, December 9th at 7 p.m., is the George Colligan Trio with Jazz Forum in Tarrytown, New York. For more information, facebook.com/jazzforumclub. Elysium Furnace Works, in collaboration with StoryScreen, presents Fire Music, the story of free jazz, a film by Tom Sergel at StoryScreen Beacon Theater in Beacon, New York, on Sunday, December 12th. There'll be special guests and a live Q&A session. For more information, firemusic.org. Saxophonist Lena Block and her quartet Feathery perform music from their new release, Rose of Lifta, on Sunday, December 12th at iBeam in Brooklyn, New York. For more information, iBeamBrooklyn.com. Bassist Percy Jones, who tours with three group projects, performs with Pact at Love & Cup in Rochester, New York on Monday, December 13th. Beachland Ballroom in Cleveland, Ohio on Tuesday, December 14th, Trouth Music Hall in Buffalo, New York on Wednesday, December 15th, and the Avalon Lounge in Catskill, New York on Thursday, December 16th. For more information, moonjune.com. On Sunday, December 12th, the Spanish Harlem Orchestra performs at Segerstrom Center for the Arts in Costa Mesa, California. For more information, scfta.org. Vocalist and composer Sarah Serpa performs selections from her new recording, Intimate Strangers, created in collaboration with Nigerian author Emmanuel Iduma at the National Jazz Museum in Harlem, New York, on Tuesday, December 14th. For more information, jmih.org/event. Toronto, Canada-based saxophonist Jesse Ryan's Fouet Culture presents Christmas at the Jazz Bistro on Thursday, December 16th, with guest singer-songwriter Ileana Cuevas and trumpeter Andrew McCanch. For more information, jesseryanmusic.com, and music is spelled M-U-Z-I-K. Saxophonist Kurt Whalum has been honored as a community hero of Franklin, Tennessee. He was presented with the USCT Humanitarian Award by the Fuller Story. The award is given to recipients that have shown kindness and bravery, honoring African-American heroes of the past and present. This comes on the release of his holiday album, How Does Christmas Sound? For more information, franklintn.gov. Grammy-nominated vocalist Catherine Russell will release her new album, Send For Me, on April 1st, 2022 on Dot Time Records. She's also announced her 2022 tour schedule, which begins in February. For more information, catherinerussell.net. And now for new releases for the holidays. A single from vocalist Mia Rebel featuring pianist Robert Irving III, Celebrate the Holiday, on Sonic Portraits Jazz. A self-released single from guitarist Todd Mosby titled An Old Farewell. Pianist Chad Lawson's self-titled Christmas in My Dreams. And vocalist Miguel de Leon with his self-released Samba de Natal. Coming out tomorrow, Friday, December 10th, pianist Nick McLean's Can You Hear Me on Brontosaurus and vocalist Don DeRose My Ship Songs from 1941 on Zoho. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger.
Tara said she's in the waiting room for some reason.
Oh, hold on. Yeah, I see her.
Okay.
She's a coming.
All right. She looks like she's a leader of a cult there. There you go.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
We were just looking at your cover photo.
My screen.
Yeah, I said you look like a leader of a cult or something like that. Saxophone cult.
You perhaps. Two do get along, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Generally.
Maybe yeah. Not after this interview. Oh, no. Yeah.
My guests are the co-leaders of the Toronto, Canada-based nonet, the Carn Davidson Nine, Juno Award-winning artists, trombonist William Carn, and saxophonist Tara Davidson. Their third studio recording is titled The History of Us and is available on Three Pines Records. Well, I want to thank you both for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Thank you, Cheryl. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah. Before you became co-leaders of the Carn-Davidson Nine, what were the two of you doing musically separately? Mm. William, why don't you go first?
I had my own small groups. I had a quintet for the longest time, all Toronto-based musicians, and then later on a quartet that was like a rock. I'm a trombone player, so it was kind of like a rock jazz unit that I just wanted to try something different because my quintet was definitely like modern jazz, more straight ahead, mainstream. And then Tara, it's kind of a similar thing, right?
Yeah, very similar. I started my performance career leading quartets and quintets. It was generally a quartet, and I'd invite in an additional saxophonist usually. I had Mike Murley with me in my group for a bit, and also another tenor saxophonist named Trevor Hogg. And then, I mean, that was until about 2012, I'd say, that I was leading smaller groups under my name. And then I sort of burnt out on performing with my own quartets or quintets. And I then did a duets project. And then around that same time was when we decided to form a band together and make it larger than anything we'd done before.
In this co-led group, who does what? Tara, what do you do?
I think we do similar things, actually, but we independently, I'll speak for myself, but independently compose music for the group and arrange it and then also take on, we divvy up, you know, the business side of things. Sending emails, arranging rehearsals or writing grants also. I mean, that's something we've been doing since we started the group is applying to arts councils here in Canada. So either provincial, the Ontario Arts Council, or the Canada Council for the Arts. And we've been lucky enough over our years as a group to receive support, funding support from both those organizations.
I'd say Tara is a much stronger writer than I am. So when it comes to the application for grants for looking for money, you know, that she does the bulk of the writing in that respect for those grant organizations. I do the more logistical kind of getting the audio together for the, you know, editing the audio for the demos and all of that. And I do the budgeting. So we do split it up. It's all, and yeah, I think we found a rhythm now that we've applied and gotten many, many rejections. To get the few acceptances, we do get those too, but you know, you get kind of have to take your lumps. But we definitely have found our roles.
Which one of you is the taskmaster? You know, when a band member is late or they haven't returned an email, who's the one who goes,
This is good. I like this. These are actual practical questions. Taskmaster?
Well, I think we feel it out. Like, we always discuss the issue together and decide who might be the more appropriate person to deal with it. So we do, I think we divvy things up. It really depends on the issue and who we're dealing with.
I guess so. I don't, we're pretty lucky. We haven't had to really come down on anybody.
But that's the truth. Yeah, it's a rare issue.
Yeah.
You say in the History of Us documentary that's available to watch on YouTube and in the notes to it that it is a meditation on family, identity, migration, and loss. But in listening to it, I also hear whimsy. I'm thinking particularly of the tune Wisely If Sincerely. And what I hear is a connection to family and a release from loss. What's the story behind that piece?
That is my composition. That is the third movement from my suite, the third and final movement from the suite. And it is a celebratory movement. And I appreciate that you heard whimsy in it because it is meant to be a lighter, release or relief to what were maybe kind of heavier content before it. And Wisely, If Sincerely is actually the translation, English translation from Scottish Gaelic for my namesake Davidson, the Scottish Davidson clan. That's our family motto,
Wow,
translated. So,
beautiful.
yeah.
Both of you teach. In addressing real life situations, experiences, and emotions in the history of us, did you recognize them in your students? And if you did, how did you address them with your students?
I think, I mean, both of our suites are very different. So my suite, my per, the pers the not perspective, but the origin story for my suite is really the story of my family's immigration to Canada, to the New World, as it were, from Hong Kong in the late 60s. Tara's suite is really about her. I mean, essentially, the first two movements are it's a love letter to her parents who are have now left us. So very different angles, both based around family. For me, as a new immigrant, I'm still first generation because I was born in another country before getting to Canada. I feel like in this time, more than any other time in our, you know, in our modern history, we're able to speak more freely than ever about who we are and what we are and where we come from, and not feel any kind of shame for sticking out or being the other, and which is something that I've dealt with it all my whole life. I'm now 52, and you know I've heard my fair share of crap over the years, and now here I am writing a suite about my parents and Asian themes, Chinese melodies, and it's all there, and I'm talking about this is where I come from, and this is how I am who I am. I'm both Canadian, North American, and I'm also Chinese. At home, I'm something else. Once I leave the door, outside of the house, I'm something else. So those issues do come up, and especially now that we both teach at universities here, University of Toronto, and other schools, and the diversity is reflected in the student body. So I feel really kind of empowered to talk about some of these issues if it comes up. Or I never, when I first started teaching, I never saw too many Asian students in jazz. Now, more and more every year it comes up and it's like, hey, I kind of ask them, hey, what's your background? What's that? I don't feel sheepish about it. And we connect. And I'm asking all the different students, like, let's just put it all out there. This is who we are, and let's just make music and let who we are reflect our music making. I hope that makes sense.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Tara, would you like to add to that?
Well, as William did say, I'm coming at my suite from a different angle. It is that theme of loss that you read about. My mom passed away when I was 5, and my dad, I was lucky enough to have until I was in my late 30s. And yeah, I just wanted to write love letters to them. And then, as I already spoke about, my third movement is a celebratory movement dedicated to the Davidson side of my family. And in terms of with, talking with students, I guess over the years, I've been teaching, goodness, for, I don't know, maybe almost 20 years. I started while I was still in university, teaching at little studios, etc. But I think, yeah, over the years, it's come up on occasion that I meet a student who has also experienced a great loss, a parent that has passed away, and I have connected with a couple people over the years who've experienced similar kind of loss. And certainly, yeah, losing a parent as a child is quite profound and can really change the trajectory of your life, the path that you're on. So, you know, offering support and comfort, that has come up on occasion over the years. Yeah. Okay.
Now, I have noticed, I heard a cat in the background. Is that who I think it is? Is it Murphy?
Yes.
No, that's what? Not
Oh,
Murphy.
Just here? In the, you mean?
Yes.
No, Murphy.
Oh, that's not.
Murphy is.
That's the middle track between the two suites, Goodbye, Old Friend. That was written for him because we lost him this summer. Oh. So that's why on that track, at the end of it, we've been told many times, I'm surprised how it's touched people that at that particular point, usually people end up crying because it's our love letter to our departed older cat. And I have a recording of him purring, and I kind of mix that in at the end of this lovely little short ballad. So
yes. Yeah. Yes.
But this is Marnie, our little cat.
Marty.
Still with us.
Marty,
yes.
Yeah. She hates it when the doors are closed. Yeah.
Yes. I do have your release, the 2017 release. So that's why I wanted to ask.
Thank you.
And I am also a cat person. Our last cat, her name is Parsnip. She is still with us. She'll be 18 in April.
Wow. Aww, that's great.
So yeah. They are so special.
They are.
Yeah.
They are.
All right, you two. So we're coming to the end of this interview, and I'd like to open it up to you. Is there a question I didn't ask you? Something you'd like to let us know?
Gosh, I this is catching us off guard. We usually don't get to ask the questions.
I guess one particular just like a shout out is, you know, we were talking about the arts councils and grants. We did receive for this recording, it was made possible through the support of the Canada Council for the Arts. So, you know, an immense big thank you to them for helping making this possible. Also to our band members, you know, we love our band. They're, you know, friends who happen to be wonderfully talented musicians. Yeah, so we love our band. Anything else?
Well, you know, you're having the Ontario Arts Council lady on, which is fantastic. I mean, I'm not sure about Tara. I've gotten those Ontario Arts Council grants in the past. They helped me basically start my career of recording my own project. So And now Canada's another good one to maybe have one as well. But yeah, no, it's just immense gratitude. This is the theme of the past 2 years, you know, with the pandemic, with the lockdown, really trying to figure out what's important and what's not as important. You know, we were all so caught up in our little lanes of just going to work and doing your thing and, you know, love it or hate it. And now we were fortunate enough to have a little break. I mean, some people may hate me for saying that, but we were forced to all slow down, like realize, oh yeah, I like this person. I don't really need to talk to that person anymore. It was just, yeah, you know who you are. No, I'm kidding. But you know what I mean? So this whole idea of gratitude, this project was made with that as well, with that notion of empathy and gratitude. And we couldn't have done it without our musician friends and support, and especially in this pandemic, the recording was crazy. What, you know, there were no gigs. We had to rehearse so much just to try to get our faces back in shape. You know, this was the first big thing we did last summer.
Oh, it was this past July. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We started rehearsals, I think, at the end of June, and then at the end of July, went into the recording studio.
Yeah. So, but thank you very much for having us on, Cheryl. This has been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Cheryl.
For more information, williamcarn.com, taradavidson.ca, facebook.com/carndavidson9, and that's the number 9, carndavidson9, again the number 9, .bandcamp.com. And now for some music. Making his debut as an electronic artist and composer, drummer Gerald Cleaver's 2020 release, Signs, on 577 Records. From the liner notes, one reads that his memories of growing up and experiencing the blossoming electronic music scene in Detroit inspired him to create this album. From it, we heard the piece Tomas. And from Canadian violinist and composer Don McDonald, recognized for his film and concert music compositions, from his November self-released Shifting Sands, we listened to Derecho. It's available now on Bandcamp and will be fully released in January of 2022. You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com, info@wgxc.org, feedback@wgxc.org, or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Our website is wgxc.org. My interview is with Jessica Deljourovesh, granting projects officer of the Ontario Arts Council, a Canadian government agency. She also served for a number of years as a music officer within the council. So thank you so much for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
When I contacted you about this interview, you astutely asked why. And that made me sharpen my focus on why. The reason I had contacted you was because I wanted to understand the process of securing funding for a project, whether it be an album, a tour, educational outreach, what have you. I've spoken over the years with US jazz and improvised music artists who had no idea what was available to them through their state or government, or had had a not so great experience interacting with funding organizations. So I'm hoping that this interview renews interest and confidence in seeking out financial support from state and government entities. Is the Ontario Arts Council governed by the Canada Council for the Arts, or does it equally exist alongside it?
Yeah, so actually the Canada Council for the Arts is a national funding agency, and they receive their funding from the Canadian government. And most Canadian provinces will have something similar to what would be a state's level in the US, will have their own funding for the arts. For some provinces, that's an office within the government. For Ontario, so that's Canada's most populated province, the Ontario Arts Council was set up as an arm's length agency of the government of Ontario. And so we are actually distinct from the Canada Council for the Arts and operate separately from that. But certainly we do collaborate sometimes and get together and share information about our granting programs and how things are working and learn from each other. And there's also a number of cities and municipalities that also have arts funding available as well.
And this is from the Ontario Arts Council website. The Ontario Arts Council offers funding programs for Ontario-based artists and arts organizations. On what occasions or matters does this Arts Council interact and work with other Canadian arts councils?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, we work independently. However, definitely artists and arts organizations may apply to and receive funding from multiple sources. So often it's that collage of support that will make a project possible or bring it to the next level. So maybe if they're able to, an artist is able to secure funding from one, they might do a short demo album. But if they're able to secure more funding from two, that means they can bring in higher production values and do a more larger scoped project.
Yeah. So is there a financial cap to what an artist or group can secure in funding from the Arts Councils in Canada?
No. So independently, the Arts Councils may set maximums, either dollar values or number of grants per year, things like that. But there's not sort of a hard limit across the Arts Councils. Having said that, for certain types of projects, there is an expectation that applicants do try and seek out other sources of funding as well. So particularly some of our larger arts organizations and, you know, music festivals and music series, they'll be doing fundraising campaigns and other things alongside the government support, ticket sales and things like that. So it's all those pieces that come together to make their projects possible. And the government funding is just a piece of that.
Now, I estimate that a quarter to a fifth of the releases that I receive weekly are from a jazz and or improvised music Canadian artist or group. And that release most likely was made possible by a Canadian arts organization. How does the Ontario Arts Council conduct outreach to the jazz and improvised music community?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I wanted to say, like, that's wonderful that you're getting so many musicians approach you. So that's terrific. And definitely the Ontario Arts Council does support, you know, creation and recording projects. So that's a piece of it for sure. And grants can give time for the artist to compose new work or to rehearse. And recording grants really enable artists to reach those higher production levels and can support marketing costs to help their music reach new audiences, like in the States or internationally as well sometimes. So I can talk a little bit about how that kind of works. So for the Ontario Arts Council, we have some programs that are dedicated exclusively to musicians and music groups. And we also have other multidisciplinary programs that folks can apply to as well, professional artists can apply to. So in our music-specific programs, we have a music creation projects program that supports songwriting and composition. We also have music recording projects that supports the costs associated with producing and releasing demos, EPs, and full-length albums. We have one that is called Music Production and Presentation Projects, and it supports rehearsal, repertoire development, single concerts, concert series, and music festivals. And then we also have another one that's for music organizations, and it supports sort of the ongoing operations of some of Ontario's larger music organizations. And that certainly includes, so, you know, jazz and other music series and festivals, but it also supports choirs and opera companies and orchestras and things like that.
So organized. Wow.
We try to be. And so, you know, conducting outreach, I will say in some ways, to be honest, we get a lot. The Ontario Arts Council gets a lot of jazz and improvised music applicants pretty regularly. So my job is made easy in some ways. Probably, I think a lot of that is because we do provide so much support to a lot of jazz series and festivals, as well as other organizations that certainly have that as a component of what they do. So for example, we provide ongoing, that operating grant that I spoke about, support to the Ottawa Jazz Festival. So that's our nation's capital, Canada's capital jazz festival, our Toronto Downtown Jazz Society, Grand River Jazz Society, Guelph Jazz Festival, and Sun Life Uptown Waterloo Jazz Festival. So those are sort of all fairly large for Canada jazz festivals that program lots of musicians. So, and they're supported by us. So definitely our name gets out there into the community. But we also do sort of pre-COVID times, I guess, we make efforts to attend events. Now it's more virtual events that we're attending. And so often that's a means of reaching new artists. And also we make ourselves available to participate in interviews like this, or a number of conferences, arts conferences and music conferences might, or local organizations might want to put on a funding panel. And so often our staff will participate and talk about the grants that are available. And the beauty of going to those type of events and participating in those is it's all those organization or that particular region's does the outreach for us and brings new people to us and to hear about us. So we do that. And also have sometimes participated in music classes, even like university level type classes. Sometimes we'll go and participate and speak about the business of music, because a lot of those programs have a course on that. So we'll participate in on a day talking about our grants and how that works.
Such a nicely wrapped package up there. Now, do you listen to jazz and improvised music?
I definitely do.
You do?
Yes, I do. I listen to a very broad range of music styles, I will say, but definitely jazz is a big piece of that, both for work, obviously, and for pleasure as well. And I have a background in music myself. So I played viola starting as a child and continued that through university. And I have a master's in musicology, so music history focus. But I also took some jazz courses in university, like playing on my viola. So that was fun, as well as doing some jazz vocal lessons. And I've also done singing, I think, since I can remember, even as a very young child, mostly at a community level and in choirs and things like that. But at home too, I definitely have lots of jazz recordings and been to lots of concerts and things like that. So
you're all over this. I mean, I trust you at the helm making these kinds of decisions. This is great.
Well, that's the lucky thing. I don't have to make the decisions. So let me tell you about that, because that is the hard part. You know, we have limited budgets available. You know, it sounds like we have heaps and heaps of money, and in some ways we do, and in some ways the demand is much greater than the money we have available. So we fund as much as we can. And the job of the program officer is to select assessors who will come in and make decisions about the grants. And for the Ontario Arts Council, we use a peer assessment process. So we bring in musicians and music administrators, arts administrators who are making decisions about these grants. So that's great. That takes pressure off me a little bit.
Well, let me change the trajectory of this interview for a minute. And it's about this particular date, April 26, 1963, Bill 162. The Ontario legislation created its Arts Council. That's you guys. Now, does this mean you will be very, very busy preparing for 2022 and your 60th anniversary?
I suppose we're always really busy. The work continues. So absolutely, we always celebrate these milestones. But I mean, the biggest means of celebrating these milestones is also continuing to support and fund the arts community and be there as a resource, help artists think about what their project is going to be and be able to describe it in such a way that you know, they have a chance of getting a grant. So yeah, it's exciting that we've been around for that long. And right from the very beginning, there were definitely some some of the first organizations we funded were, you know, orchestras and things like that. So definitely music ones were right at the beginning of our existence in our, in terms of our funding. So it's great that lots of those organizations are still around and we're still providing support to them.
Jessica, as we come to the end of this interview, I'd like to give you the opportunity to answer a question I haven't asked, to let us know about something about you and or the Ontario Arts Council.
Well, I think it's something that we do that's really interesting and important is to support artists at all career stages and doing a variety of work. So I've talked about these music programs and we fund anything and everything. If you can name that genre, we've funded it and supported it at some point in time. But it's really exciting to see either longtime artists like Jane Bennett or someone like that who goes on to receive recognition nationally and internationally, as well as sort of those up and coming artists getting support at early stages of their careers. So I can think of like one sort of next generation artist like Angelique Francis from Ottawa, who's singer, songwriter, composer, plays double bass and guitar and things like that, and seeing their development of their career and what that grant early in their career can do to just give them that boost to keep their momentum going and to help them gain that greater recognition. So I think that's pretty special. And it's definitely exciting for those assessors that are reading those applications and listening to sort of samples of music and sometimes finding about artists for the first time themselves as they're reading the applications and getting excited about what they're seeing that's happening in the jazz and improvised music and all kinds of music across Ontario.
For more information, arts.on.ca. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host the Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com or info@wgxc.org. We appreciate your feedback. Feedback@wgxc.org or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Thank you.